877-500-5266.
This is KBOO Portland, where the time is approximately 10:15 in the a.m. Coming up, we have Locus Focus with your host, Barbara Bernstein. Stay tuned.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Wilkin & Company, P.C., Certified Public Accountants, helping businesses, individuals, and nonprofit organizations make financial decisions based on their personal values since 1987. Wilkin & Company is located at 2435 Southwest 5th Avenue in Portland. Information at 503-225-1359 or wilkincpas.com.
The theme too.
Good morning and welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. World Bank President Jim Yong Kim has vowed that his institution will fight poverty and climate change, a claim that World Bank presidents have made for two decades. But by funding development projects and programs that warm the planet and destroy critical natural resources on which the poor depend, the bank has been hurting the very people it claims to serve. This morning, we'll talk about how the World Bank is a microcosm of global forces that threaten both environmental and social ruin. My guest is Bruce Rich, who's author of Foreclosing the Future, The World Bank and the Politics of Environmental Destruction. Bruce, welcome to Locus Focus.
Yes, thank you. I'm happy to participate in your program.
And you also must realize you're participating in our pledge drive, so beware.
Okay, that's great, too.
Okay.
I'm delighted.
And we are not funded by the World Bank, so
okay.
We need our listeners to help us. So we're going to be talking this morning about the World Bank, which probably a lot of listeners are familiar with, at least on a certain level. And I will just kind of share my experience. I learned from your book that when you walk into the headquarters of the World Bank in Washington, D.C., you see a sign that says, "Our dream is a world free of poverty." Now, on the other hand, many environmental and social activists and advocates for the poor think of the World Bank in terms of structural adjustment, austerity, building giant mega dams, and encouraging development of fossil fuel resources. So how are those two very contradictory paradigms reconciled by the World Bank?
Well, the short answer is that there's a huge disconnect that seems to be growing greater and greater between the bank's rhetoric, its official pronouncements, starting with the new president, Jim Yong Kim. He's been there a bit more than a year, and what they're actually doing in their operations. And this is a problem that's continued for many years, for decades, in fact. It's well documented in internal bank studies. So that's the fundamental problem. I can tell you a bit more if you want why this disconnect is there and why it continues.
Well, I think we'll probably continue to talk about that throughout the next half hour. So it seems, though, I wonder what were really the founding principles of the World Bank? Because it seems that while it's supposedly been developed to alleviate poverty around the world, it really has some other agendas. So what was the driving force behind the World Bank in the first place?
Well, it's like many institutions that have been around for a long time, it adjusts to changing circumstances. It was conceived of and founded actually in 1944 at the so-called Bretton Woods Conference that was held in July 1944 at the town of Bretton Woods, New Hampshire, and you had the representatives of all the Allied governments that were fighting World War II against the Axis, which by that time included around 44 countries. It included all the countries, European governments in exile that were occupied, and included a few later would be called developing countries, including parts then of the British Commonwealth, like India, also countries like Egypt, Ethiopia, the Latin American countries, and so on. The goal was to set up an institution for the after World War II that would first finance reconstruction in Europe and then finance international development in the poorer other countries of the world. And the original part of the World Bank was called the International Bank for Reconstruction and Development. As it turned out, the bank didn't have a very big role in reconstruction of Europe. It was a Marshall Plan from the U.S. that paid most of the bill for that. So it pretty quickly went into the business of giving loans to first countries in Latin America and then other countries in Asia and Africa for so-called development projects.
And what was the rationale behind it? Was there an ideology that the bank was trying to fulfill?
Well, the original ideology was to contribute to economic prosperity. Its original charter said it was to fund for economically productive projects, and the idea is that a prosperous, interconnected world would be less prone to war. And it was part of the whole vision that coming out of World War II, which was driven and led by the U.S., that we needed a globally connected markets, free trade, promote economic growth, and this would be a win-win situation for the world, and so on. Of course, at the time, a lot of that was in the self-interest of the U.S., but at the time, that seemed to be in the interest of everybody. Later, starting in 1968 to 1981, that's when Robert McNamara headed the World Bank, he is the one who changed the mission, really, a bit away, not just from financing economically productive projects to contribute to growth and prosperity around the world, but to focusing on poverty alleviation, to focusing these productive investments, supposedly, on helping the poorest of the poor in poor countries. And that's where the bank, since that time, since the late 60s, the bank has declared to the world, and particularly when it's raising money from the rich donor countries that contribute to it, that its mission is poverty alleviation.
Well, how well has it done? Or how well was it doing back in the days of Robert McNamara in actually alleviating poverty?
Well, it's quite controversial because a lot of people maintain that, though the rhetoric sounded very impressive, that in reality, McNamara was the person who greatly increased the lending of the World Bank, and of course, the lending at that time over 90% of it went to governments for large infrastructure projects, large agricultural development projects, which in theory somehow targeted the poor. But in reality, there was big corruption. There was oftentimes the beneficiaries weren't the poorer segments of the population in developing countries, but local elites and in part the international companies that would bid for large infrastructure projects for the procurement contracts to help build the big dams or roads or what have you. So again, under McNamara, that's when this disconnect began to grow from the bank's mission, which was, he loudly proclaimed, was poverty alleviation, and actually what was actually happening on the ground with these projects.
Well, this morning we're talking with Bruce Rich, who's the author of Foreclosing the Future of the World Bank and the Politics of Environmental Destruction, and we're going to come back and talk more with Bruce in a moment and talk about some of the rather stupendous environment-busting projects that the World Bank has been responsible for or has helped fund in the last 40 or so years. But first, we're going to talk with Jen and Joe. I like that alliteration there, who are going to help me to help you to become a supporting member of KBOO and to help us to meet our goal for the pledge drive today and by the end of the week. So welcome, Joe and Jen.
Welcome. We are so excited to be learning some more information about the World Bank. You know, this is a sort of force in the world that is having a great impact across our globe. And we're not, it's difficult to get a very in-depth analysis of what the World Bank is really up to if you just look in your newspaper or look on TV news. You're going to get an in-depth analysis here on KBOO because we respect your intelligence and we know that you want to know what's going on. KBOO listeners are some of the most informed people in this country and globally, because people listen to us streaming on the web too. And to help support that information, to help keep that information coming to you, we depend on your support. We only ask you 3 times a year if you can just take a couple of lattes out of your budget and give it to KBOO instead. 877-500-5266. 877-500-5266 or donate kboo.fm.
Let me repeat those because I am number impaired myself. Right now, all of you out there know the importance of KBOO. You know it's the best in music. You know it's the best in public affairs. You know it's the only progressive source of news in the region, unfortunately. You can help make it survive and thrive. 1-877-500-5266. 1-877-500-5266 or online kboo.fm. This is really important. We come to you 3 times a year. It's annoying. Now people say, don't say the pledge drive is annoying. Well, it is. Come on. Realistically, we have to ask you for money, though. Otherwise, this station fades and disappears, and what are you going to get? Some kind of weird Christian fundamentalist thing or neo-Nazi weirdness of another sort? No, no. You don't want that to happen. You want us to be progressive radio for you with music, with information that enriches your life. KBOO.FM or 1-877-500-5266.
We have a goal of $150.
Is that all?
One person out there could right now, make our day, make it a beautiful, wonderful day for us. Just give us a call. Or if you want to do $5 a month, we'll take that too. We appreciate any support that you can do. You help to keep this kind of vital information on the air. You know, information, knowledge is power. And unfortunately, we're getting less and less power with less and less opportunities to really know what's going on. You're not just going to read about this randomly on the internet. You need to have folks to do the research and bring these folks to you so that you know what's really happening locally and globally.
Actually, I want to interject that you can bring this information into your home besides in the radio in the form of a book, because if you make a pledge for $60 right now by calling 877-500-5266. You can get a copy of Foreclosing the Future, the World Bank, and the Politics of Environmental Destruction by Bruce Rich, who is the person we're talking to this morning. And you can get a lot more information than we're going to have time to share with you today by reading this book, which I just finished the other day. It is really dense with information that will make your head spin about basically the inequities of the way the global economic and social and political systems work and how we need to change it, basically. So give a call right now at 877-500-5266. And for a $60 pledge, you can get a copy of Foreclosing the Future. And I guess I'm back.
Okay. Thank you, Barbara.
Sure. So we're back talking with Bruce Rich, who is the author of Foreclosing the Future, the World Bank and the Politics of Environmental Destruction. You talked about Robert McNamara, who was perhaps one of the best known of the World Bank presidents. But it seems that most of the people who've been the presidents of the World Bank bring an agenda that is either neoliberal at best or neoconservative or maybe paleoconservative at worst. And it doesn't seem that most of the World Bank presidents have come from an area where there's a lot of expertise in what the needs of the third world are, and they come more from the corporate world and the banking world of the United States. Is that true?
Well, that's absolutely true. That by it's not written anywhere, but by tradition, the president of the World Bank is always an American. That's because the U.S. is the biggest contributor to the World Bank. And in general, the presidents have come from Wall Street banking and finance backgrounds. There are a couple of exceptions, but Robert McNamara was an exception since he had been Secretary of Defense. But and Paul Wolfowitz was had a brief interlude as a president in 2006 and 2007. He, of course, he had been secretary. He had worked in the U.S. Defense Department, too, but he had to quit ahead of the end of his tenure because of a scandal involving his alleged favoritism given to a female employee of the bank who was also his romantic partner at the time.
So I actually want to get into some of the projects that seem to me to be the most egregious examples of how the there's a big disconnect between what the World Bank proclaims to do and what it actually does. And maybe we can tie that into the political connections that the World Bank has that probably supersede its other concerns. But there's when I started getting really involved in studying rivers and dams and looking at the whole impact of damming great rivers, at the time that I was doing my project, the days of the great dams in North America were pretty much, all those areas have been built out. So the big dams are now being built in the developing world. And I learned that the World Bank is a fundamental driver in building mega dams. So I wanted to talk about a couple of these dams that are really indicative of some of the other underlying problems. And the first one, and I was reading a book a couple years ago about about the Narmada Sarovar Dam project in India and the impact it had both on the ecology and environment of that watershed, but also how it dislocated millions of people, and that there was no real plan in bringing the dam project forward to find a decent way, a really appropriate way to relocate these people. So I wanted to talk about the whole issue of what these dams do both to the environment and to the people that live in areas that are going to turn into giant reservoirs, and then the inability or disinterest in actually looking at these problems head on. So let's use the Narmada project
as
an example.
Well, the Narmada Dam, it's good that you mentioned that, because that had a huge impact on public policy internationally and the bank for a while, at least, way beyond just the parameters of the project. The story of that was basically the bank lent hundreds of millions of dollars in the 1980s for this large dam on the Narmada River. Now, the Narmada River is the biggest westward-flowing river in India. It's a sacred, after the Ganges, it's the most sacred river in India. Of course, everyone's heard of the Ganges, but relatively few people have heard of the Narmada unless they've been to India or they have a certain interest in it. So this was a huge project. It involved the forced relocation of probably around 250,000 people. And through the dam reservoir behind that would be created and so on. And these people were some of the poorest people in India, subsistence farmers. And of course, if there's not a resettlement and rehabilitation plan for a big dam project like Narmada for the people who are displaced, then these people are reduced from subsistence poverty to absolute destitution. And alas, in the Narmada case, though the World Bank had a policy on forced resettlement of caused by the big infrastructure projects they would finance, basically it was supposed to require the government to come up with a rehabilitation plan, resettlement plan that was agreeable to the people resettled, that wouldn't make them worse off and preferably better off. But alas, the bank in practice ignored that policy. The project kept going ahead. There were even health problems, spread malaria and waterborne diseases linked with it. And the people behind the dam were being flooded up with the reservoir, grew more and more desperate. Finally, it led to a huge international scandal, parliamentarians from around the world protesting the project. There were 10 U.S. senators, one-tenth of the U.S. senate, who wrote to the president of the World Bank at the time protesting it. The bank formed an independent commission to investigate what was going on. And, of course, what this commission discovered is that senior bank management and the people working on the project had actually lied to the president of the World Bank and the bank's board of directors representing the member countries. So the short of it is the bank finally had to withdraw its funding, and it was a huge scandal. But the critical point was that the independent commission was called the Morse Commission, after Bradford Morse, who had been a head of the United Nations Development Program, he was a former American congressman, said that what was going on in that project was not some exception, that it looked like it was pretty typical for a lot of the big dam projects and big infrastructure projects the bank was financing, i.e. that it might have good policies on paper, but they were being ignored and actually shoving the money out the door, and this was all being sort of pushed under the rug and so on. So that that was the story of that project. It led to the creation of an independent inspection panel in the bank, kind of a permanent independent panel that could review complaints of affected people around the world who would say that the bank projects were hurting them because the bank would not even implement its own policies. And it led to a period in the through the 1990s where the bank didn't finance many big dam projects. Unfortunately, it doesn't seem to have learned the lessons of the Sardar-Sarovar-Narmada River project, because more recently it's declared it's going to get back into financing big infrastructure projects, and particularly big giant dam projects, in the name of fighting climate change, because obviously compared to a big coal plant, a dam reservoir doesn't emit much in the way of greenhouse gases and so on. But they don't seem to have learned the lessons from these disastrous projects in the past, which the Narmada project was sort of a seminal paradigmatic one, if you want. So that's why people are worried now about the direction the bank is taking.
Well, there is a recent dam that was just completed in Laos, the Nam Thun 2. And
yes,
I want to talk about that. Because I started learning about that dam a few years ago and understood that while Laos was behind it, and I guess Thailand, who was going to be getting the electricity from the dam, was behind it, Vietnam and Cambodia were completely freaked out because it could possibly and very likely destroy the fishery on the Mekong River. And it would change the flow. The Mekong in Cambodia is known to change course twice a year, and when the rains come and when the rains recede, and that is what really brings the fish upstream. So I think we actually have to take another pledge break. But when we come back, I wanted to talk about the Nam Thu Dam and the lessons unlearned from the Narmada project.
Yeah, that's a great example.
So we'll be back in just a few moments with Bruce Rich. In the meantime, Jen and Joe are here to tell us how we need your help, because KBOO is not funded by the World Bank. Is that true, Joe?
Well, you know, actually, we put an application in. We wanted to build a dam across our beautiful facility here, and then we thought we would add a pond of fish and then a pound of flesh, and we would have it all done. But you know what? The World Bank did not take us up on our request. In fact, no bank has taken up our request. In fact, no institution of finance whatsoever has paid any attention to us. And that's why we need you listening out there to pay attention to us, because we are listener-supported radio. What does that mean? That means that three times a year, we come to you hat in hand or hand in head or whatever, begging you, pleading with you, reasoning with you, arguing with you, yelling with you to get money from you. Why is it so hard? Because people are working so hard, and because people are so busy, and because the economy is in such a rut.
So what do we do, Joe?
We beg people. We argue with people. We assert the need. We point out the incredible programming, the great music, and so on of KBOO. And we say, won't you make a pledge right now to KBOO.FM? That's on the internet, KBOO.FM. Or even more exciting, because you get to talk to people, 1-877-500-5266. That's 1-877-500-5266. Or better yet, and amazingly, you can come into our palatial facilities at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue.
So what happens? What do they get? What does a person get when they call?
Oh, they get so much good stuff. I'm going to let my partner on the air, Jen, here, describe some of the amazing gifts we are giving as rewards, I guess you'd call them, as supportive documents to the process of giving money to KBOO or something like that.
Well, if you call right now, we would love to send you this thank you gift. It's a book written by this gentleman with whom we're speaking to right now. It's called Foreclosing the Future, The World Bank and the Politics of Environmental Destruction. You know, it's so important to understand what the World Bank is doing. It's an incredibly influential organization that is affecting nearly every country on the globe. And if we don't understand what the World Bank is doing and how it is affecting the economies and the social structure of countries around the globe, including our own country, then that's less power to us. These organizations can do whatever they want, and then we end up paying the price in wars, in famines, and crises around the country because the World Bank is not really supporting the people as they're supposed to do. So be informed, and you can help make your community and the world stronger by helping us at 877-500-5266. Come to visit us at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. We would love to meet you. Take a tour of our station or go to kboo.fm. You know, just for a couple of cups of coffee a month is all that it takes to really help KBOO. You make a huge difference in the world by keeping information flowing. Knowledge is power. And if you're not getting information, then you are not being empowered. Empower yourself and each other. 877-500-5266. You know, I gave twice during this pledge drive because I realized, gosh, I think I can afford just a little bit more to help KBOO because this is such an incredible news and information and culture resource. We are the most diverse radio station in our entire region. You know, you can come down here and meet people of all different walks of life. They are all invested in this powerful community radio station. 877-500-5266. This is your radio station. You own it. You keep it going for 45 years. Continue spreading the powerful information. 877-500-5266 or kboo.fm.
Well, you know, I just realized sitting here that it's my membership needs to be renewed. So I'm going to renew my membership right now. And that will help to, I hope, show lead. What is that called? Lead by example. So it's time for me to renew my membership for $120 a year, and that's what I'm going to do when I get off the air. So thanks, Jen and Joe, and we will be back shortly to talk a little bit more with you. We're talking this morning with Bruce Rich, who's author of Foreclosing the Future, The World Bank and the Politics of Environmental Destruction. And we're talking about how some of the banks, or most of the banks, big projects, particularly their large infrastructure projects, do probably a lot more to harm the poor that the bank is supposed to be serving around the world than they do to help anyone. So Bruce, let's talk about the Nam Thun Dan in Laos and what it was supposed to do, what in reality its impact has been, and some of the scandals connected to it.
Yeah. Well, this was when the bank then, in the 2000s, decided it was going to go back into financing big dams. And Nam Thun 2 was supposed to be the example of how it had learned its lessons from the Narmada project and so on, and that how it would finance in big dams and other infrastructure that would bring benefits to the poor, and for those who would be adversely affected, they would be taken care of. And this was a project for the country of Laos, which only has about 5.5 million people, was quite huge. It was the bank put in over $250 million. It was a 1,000-megawatt dam. It was big private sector investment. You had the French electric company, Electricité de France, which would be the project promoter. And the idea is that the power from this big dam, which was on a tributary of the Mekong, would not go to the local people in Laos, most of whom don't have electricity, or a lot of whom don't have electricity. It would be sold to Thailand. And supposedly the money from selling the power would go to the Laotian government, which would then use the money to help the poor in Laos. And unfortunately, Laos is the government in Laos is one of the most corrupt on earth. It ranks near the bottom in the Transparency International rankings of perceived corruption of countries. And there wasn't much in the way of safeguards to ensure that the money from the revenue of the dam that would go to the Lao government would actually go to help the poor. I think even worse was the basic design of the project, because as you point out, the dam building on the Mekong and the tributaries of the Mekong has not just upstream impacts of flooding out people, but big downstream impacts through destruction of fisheries and that kind of thing. And in the case of Laos, the project it displaced about 6,400 people upstream, but much more importantly, it affected adversely the livelihoods of more than 100,000 farmers downstream of the dam who depended on the river for fisheries and so on. Now, in effect, over 100,000 people in Laos, that's 2% of the population. Imagine a project in the United States that was being sold for as poverty alleviation, which would, at the outset, impoverish further 6 or 7 million of the poorest people in the country. Well, that's the scale of this thing for Laos. And indeed, what happened was that though the bank promised it would do things to help economically rehabilitate the more than 100,000 people downstream who could no longer depend on the fisheries in the river, which was the main source of protein for them, it actually led to declining fish catches, all kinds of illegal mining and poaching, contamination of drinking water, and so on. And the project was widely condemned in the press. The bank, the disconnect here is the bank praised this as a model project. Yet you had people, for example, a gentleman named David Hales, who was a former professor at the University of Michigan. He headed environmental sustainability programs at the U.S. Agency for International Development, the Clinton Administration. He wrote a whole series of articles in the New York Times where he denounced the project as exactly the kind of thing that the bank shouldn't finance. He said that this would be a project that would mainly sell power to Thailand and would produce profits for a French corporation, and the money would go in an untransparent way to a widely recognized corrupt Lao government without safeguards to ensure that the money would actually reach the poor. So the bank seems to have learned nothing. In fact, this project is sort of an example that it's getting worse in some ways.
Well, with the new president installed last year, Jim Yong Kim, who was at one time a very strong advocate for the poor and for a strong critic of the bank, do you see any hope for a shift in the near future or in the long term, for that matter?
Well, many people were very helpful when he came in because, as you point out, unlike most of the previous presidents of the World Bank, he didn't come from a finance or a banking background, a commercial banking background. He's a physician and an anthropologist. He had worked for years with a wonderful non-governmental organization called Partners for Health, which has worked to provide medical care for the poorest people in the world and so on and so forth. And as you say, in 2000, he co-edited an indictment of, among other things, the World Bank. It was a book called Dying for Growth about the disastrous impacts on public health of what he said were the neoliberal pro-corporate economic globalization policies of the World Bank and other international financial institutions and so on. But unfortunately, when he came in, he made a lot of pronouncements about he was going to refocus the bank even more on poverty alleviation, fight climate change, and so on. But what the bank is doing right now is totally at odds with these pronouncements. And I can name a couple of examples. One area that has terrible environmental and social impacts, and where there's a huge literature showing it does very little to help poor populations, it's extractive industries, mining. And the bank has been actually upping up its investment in big gold, copper mining, platinum mining projects around the world. And a terrible example was a project in South Africa called the Marikana Platinum Mining Operation. The bank lent over $200 million to the Lon Ming Corporation in London, which is the third largest miner of platinum on Earth. And this was supposed to encourage corporate social responsibility, community development, you know, opportunities for women, HIV education, everything you can imagine. But the South African Council of Churches has a foundation that monitored the situation there, reported appalling conditions, terrible environmental contamination, and so on. Well, this all exploded in August of 2012 when striking migrant laborers protested the project, and the South African police came in and shot 34 of them to death. Scores of others were injured. It was the worst massacre in South Africa, government massacre of workers in half a century. So it was a nightmare. Archbishop Desmond Tutu called this Marikana project, which the bank had touted as a model of how they can work with the private sector for corporate social responsibility, is a nightmare. And 3 weeks after the massacre, in September 2012, Dr. Kim, made a visit to South Africa, gave a press conference where he praised the work of the part of the World Bank that had financed this project, the International Finance Corporation. It's a part of the bank that finances private sector development, without mentioning this terrible massacre. So that's appalling. And the bank, despite pledges of Dr. Kim that the bank is not going to finance coal-fired power plants, for example, in the future, except in rare circumstances where there's no alternative. In reality, they're considering financing a big 600-megawatt brown coal, lignite coal-fired plant in Kosovo. And, of course, the lignite brown coal, it's the dirtiest form of coal. And they claim that there's no alternative, yet the bank's own renewable energy experts have done analyses which would say that there are plenty of alternatives. And so on. So this is we have this alarming disconnect between Dr. Kim, who seems like he's in a bubble, and what the bank is continuing to do and announcing that it's planning to do.
So is there any hope? Is there anything we can do to change things around the World Bank?
Well, yes, there is, because a big part of the story. I worked as a lawyer for major U.S. environmental groups for decades in Washington. First, the Natural Resources Defense Council, and then the Environmental Defense Fund. And after I left these organizations, I focused on writing this book. And the tragedy with the World Bank is that over the years, it has learned a lot about what not to do and what it should do. There are these reams of internal reports and documents, which I quote at length in my book. It's the main source for the criticisms of my book. Yet these internal reports are—they're kind of like a Greek chorus. They're kind of like a chorus in a Greek tragedy. They keep repeating the same lessons learned, but the bank doesn't apply them in new lending operations. And if only the bank would just focus not on moving money out the door, but on focusing on environmental and social quality and sustainability, really live up to its actual rhetoric, then it could be a catalytic force to improve the quality of development, to do what it claims it does or intends to do, which is to help the poor in an environmentally sustainable way. The problem really is it's an internal culture, an unwritten culture, but very strong. It was first called over two decades ago by internal reports the loan approval culture, or the pressure to lend, where it was noted that the pressure to move the money out the door is what what drives the institution, that staff are rewarded actually for violating or ignoring World Bank policies. I mean, that was the case in the Narmada project, just so long as they get the loans out the door, and that continues. And so I think this has to change. I would say the member governments, both the rich country donors like the U.S. and the borrowing countries, they're certainly co-responsible, because the situation seems to suit them fine. They don't really. I say the bank is a microcosm of these larger problems or trends in our world. Because whether it's fighting climate change or helping the poor or fighting corruption, the bank, the member countries, though they will have sometimes politically correct rhetoric. When push comes to shove, they're not so interested in really helping the poor, or even in climate-friendly development, or even fighting the corruption in the bank. And that's so we have to start by putting more pressure on the U.S. Congress, to put pressure on the World Bank to finally deliver on its rhetoric. And frankly, in the past, there have been several occasions where this has worked momentarily, but the momentum didn't continue. I mean, the bank will listen, for example, when the U.S. Congress threatens to hold U.S. funding from it.
And actually, we're just about out of time, but I want to thank you very much for joining us, Bruce. And I hope we can have you back sometime.
Thank you so much, Barbara. I really enjoyed this.
Me too. We've been talking this morning with Bruce Rich, who's author of Foreclosing the Future, the World Bank, and the Politics of Environmental Destruction. And you've been listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio. And if you're just tuning in, you'd like to hear what you missed, or you want your friends or family to hear the show, you can listen to it online or download the audio later this afternoon on our website, kboo.fm/locusfocus. Next week, we'll be talking with J.B. McKinnon, author of a fascinating book called The Once and Future World. And now it's time to talk some more with Jen and Joe about why you need to step up to the plate right now and become a member of KBOO.
And here's a warning. I am going to sing because I want you to take your money and put it where my mouth is. In fact, give it to KBOO.
Actually, my dog is starting to leave the studio right now. She's standing at the door.
Too late. The banks are made of marble with a guard at every door. They're keeping there the money that the people sweated for. And you could stop this singing right now by just making a contribution to KBOO. You can go online at kboo.fm or 1-877-500-5266. 1-877-500-5266. If you don't do it, I'm going to sing.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Keep those phones ringing.
Okay, folks, you heard Joe's threat, and I'm sitting right next to him, so have some mercy and give us a call. 877-500-5266. We want to thank Juniors who helped provide food today, 1742 Southeast 12th Avenue and Hawthorne Fish House, 4343 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard, and Breakside Brewery, 820 Northeast Deckham. And we also want to thank these wonderful supporters who gave us a call and gave us some of their hard-earned dollars. We so appreciate it, and we will put it to excellent use. Bryce, a new member in Northeast Portland. Terry, renewed in Northeast. Nancy and Malala is a new member. Welcome to KBOO. Bill is a renewing member in Southeast Portland. Dave, renewing Westside Portland. Milan, renewed in Southeast Portland. Johanna, renewed and here in PDX. Mary, new in Southwest Portland. And Jay, renewed in Southwest Portland. So we just love you all.
I'm going to have to sing. I don't hear the phones ringing.
Oh, no, he's going to start singing again, folks.
Oh, the
877-500-5266. Thank you. Please have mercy.
I'm sitting
right next to him. Please have mercy. 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. You can come down here and sing with him if you want.
No, don't do that. 1-877-500-5266.
It could be a barbershop quartet. KBOO.FM. You know, we have a $1,000 goal. We need your help. Give us a call. Help stop Joe from singing and support your community radio. You know, we are the lifeblood of our community. If you are working on any kind of issue, whether it's coal or clean water or gay rights or teachers' rights, we are here. We are talking about it, and we are responsive to your actions in the community. Be responsive to KBOO for the price of a couple of cups of coffee a month. You won't even know that it's gone out of your bank. You can make a huge difference in your community by supporting this vital source of information and culture. 877-500-5266. Please help us reach our $1,000 goal. We have over 500 volunteers, tiny, tiny little staff. We really put every cent to very wise use, and we use it to support your community work, your community organizations, our schools, our unions, environmentalists out there that are working to help clean up the messes.
And not
1-877-500-5266.
Not 1 cent goes to my singing lessons, as you might be able to tell. 1-877-500-5266. I bungled that. Let me say it again. 1-877-500-5266 or online, kboo.fm. Don't miss the opportunity to make a contribution right now.
And I just want to go out by reminding us that we were talking this morning with Bruce Rich, author of Foreclosing the Future, The World Bank and the Politics of Environmental Destruction. That book can be yours for a $60 pledge if you call right now at 877-500-5266. I'm Barbara Bernstein. I want to thank you for listening. My engineer's been Sam. Thanks, Sam. And we're going to go out with a very brief snippet from Tom Waits before we head into the next show, Health Watch, with David Naiman.
When you walk through the garden, you gotta watch your back. Well, I beg your pardon, walk the straight and narrow track. If you walk with Jesus, he's gonna save your soul. You gotta keep the devil way down in the hole. He's got the fire and the fury at his command. Well, you don't have to worry.
This is KBOO Portland, where the time is approximately 11 a.m. Coming up is Health Watch with your host, Dr. David Naiman.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde Vocational Rehabilitation Program, providing assistance to the eligible tribal members with disabilities on regaining, retaining, and securing employment particular to their strengths, capabilities, and experience. Information at grandronde.org or 1-800-242-8196.
The purpose of this program is not to prescribe a treatment to individuals. Listeners should consult their healthcare practitioner before attempting any treatment.
Good morning and welcome to Health Watch. I'm Dr. David Naiman, your host. Is it possible that the root of your heart disease, your respiratory allergies, your low mood, your autoimmune condition could be traced back to imbalances in your gut? Today's guest, Dr. Alejandro Junger, thinks so. If you don't recognize the name, you've probably heard of his enormously successful New York Times bestselling book and detox program, Clean. Dr. Junger is here today to talk about his much-anticipated follow-up, Clean Gut, the breakthrough plan for eliminating the root cause of disease and revolutionizing your health. Welcome to Health Watch, Dr.